Hey Slingers, it's been a while. Welcome back to the Word Slinger Podcast. And today we're revisiting an old friend, an old guest of the show, Steve Barry, thriller author. And I'm excited for this one, so stick around. Hey, how you doing on money? I know it's a touchy subject, but I got something that may help you out. See, I'm using an app called Acorns, and it helps me manage some investing, put some money back, get a little interest. It's kind of nice to watch my money grow. So I want to share that with you. Go to kevintomlinson.com/acorns and you'll get some free money. See you there.
It's the Word Slinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand, write your book, redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Well, I am Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger, and thank you for sticking around for another Word Slinger podcast. I know it's been a while. So much has changed since the last time I talked to you. And the biggest thing is, Kara and I are no longer living full-time in the travel trailer, because we are now living full-time in a travel van. So hashtag van life. So we left Kerrville, Texas, which is the last time you heard from me. And we were heading back to the Houston area so that we could spend some time going through our storage unit here, kind of consolidating a couple of different storage units. And what we decided was we would stop, and we had kind of had this discussion about how it would have been nice had we gone with a van over the travel trailer. Because the travel trailer was great, and we really loved it. I really, in some ways, I kind of miss it because it had a lot more space, a lot more living space than the van. The van is built to accommodate two people most of the time. I think that's the way it's designed. But it actually is much more spacious than I'm making out to sound. But the idea was, Kara and I have discovered we are road trip people. We like to hop in. At the time, we'd hop into the truck. We'd leave the travel trailer behind at the RV resort, and we would drive a couple hours to go check out some other part of the country. And then we'd have to turn around and drive a couple hours to get back. So that was never quite the plan. So we decided, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we had the van, had a van, and we could just stop here. You know, what would happen frequently is, like, we would be, we were in Kerrville, which is only about 30 minutes from Fredericksburg, Texas. But we went to, like, Blanco and, you know, went to San Antonio, went to a bunch of places kind of close by, but not so close. You know, it's still like an hour minimum to get to most places around there. And we thought, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to go back? We'd have a bathroom with us. We'd have the AC in this thing is kicking on full on. I'm sorry about the background noise. We'd have our bathroom. We'd have our beds. We'd have our little galley kitchen. We'd have, you know, a refrigerator. So we decided, you know, it would be better to have the van if we could get one. And we kicked it around for a while, and we experimented, but we weren't really finding anything. And when we did find something, it wasn't quite. Maybe it wasn't in our budget, or maybe it wasn't, you know, we'd have to bend over backwards to make it fit the budget or something along those lines. So on our way back from Kerrville, we went through what we like to refer to as RV Alley in the Houston area. It's in Katy, Texas on I-10, where there are a whole bunch of RV dealerships, just one after the other. And there was one we'd kind of visited a couple of times. We never bought anything from them, but we stopped at a place called Ron Hoover RV and Marine. And they just happened to have, they'd just gotten in a brand new 2021 Coachman van, travel van, that has, you know, solar on board, generators, you know, all this stuff that makes it really quite cool for boondocking, is what they call it in the RV world, where you're off-grid for a time. So we thought, well, why not? We'll look into it. And we sort of put in a bid, basically, offered our truck and our camper for trade. And over the next week, we sort of went back and forth to see if we could get the financing dealt with. And boom, by the end of that week, we had a van. And we've actually now been living in it for 2 weeks. We're in it full time. We're still in the Houston area. We're still dealing with, because of the shift in how we're living, we had to shift how we lived in the van. We had to downsize again, take more stuff out. And so that's what we've been working on, is kind of finding the balance. And what's happened is it's turned out we're living a more minimalist lifestyle in this van. So that's interesting. We thought we were living minimalist before, but man, we really cut things down. So, and it's changed a lot about how I do my work, how Kara does her work. It's just overall, it's a very different experience, and we're kind of adjusting to it. But we really, really like it. I mean, we just really like it. So that's where we are. So no longer camper life. Now it's hashtag van life. And Kara and I we're going to, here in the next couple of weeks, we're waiting on a couple of objects now. We're getting this hitch-mounted box that will allow us to carry a few more things on the bumper of this thing. That's going to make some of our transition a little easier. And then we're going to be rolling out of Texas finally and heading for someplace north, cooler. It is not cool here. It's very hot. Very high temperatures and very high humidity here in the Houston, Texas area. So that's made this transition interesting. I actually think this is a good thing. Because we're having to adjust to Houston heat and humidity in the van, it means that we're already kind of prepared to deal with a bit of discomfort. But overall, it's actually been quite a comfortable experience, I have to say. It's just that the AC just runs constantly because it just can't keep up with the Texas heat. So won't be staying around hot places and humid places for sure when we get out there. So anyway, that's the update on RV life, van life, and we're looking forward to seeing what we come up with from there. If you've been following me on Facebook and YouTube, I've been talking about this for the past couple of weeks now on my Kevin show. So if you haven't seen that, go to youtube.com/KevinTomlinson. That's my personal channel. And that's where I'm starting to do a lot more content there. So make sure you subscribe to me there. Some stuff is oriented towards authors. Some stuff is oriented towards the RV stuff. But it's a mishmash of everything I do. So go check that out and subscribe. Subscribe and hit the little bell notification for notifications. I'll get the patter down as I get more into the YouTube space. I don't want to delay any longer. We're 7 minutes in. Actually, we're probably a little longer than that. And I've got this interview with Steve Berry that I did quite a while back. So I'm glad to finally produce this episode. I'm going to see about figuring out ways to start doing the production side of this. It's been challenging because we're just kind of still getting used to everything in the van. Even my writing has been a little off. I'm not doing as much. I'm doing a little each day, but I'm not doing as much as I would prefer. So there's some adjustment there. But we're getting there. We're going to get into the rhythm of it. I can already see it happening. So soon. So anyway, I'm sorry for the delays. Bear with me as we kind of adjust to multiple new lifestyles. This is the fourth RV in 4 years that we've owned. Go figure. I'm going to be writing a little something about that soon, probably for the blog or something, so stick around. So anyway, until then, we're going to jump right into this interview with Steve Berry, and I hope you enjoy it. We may do a little, I haven't decided yet whether I'm coming back after the interview or not. We'll see. I'm trying out a whole new thing here, so if I don't see you on the other side, God bless you. And I'll see you next time. But I'm going to try to swing back around. So we're going to see. I know. This is production on the come here. So enjoy this interview with Steve Berry.
Hey, everybody. Now, I almost don't even need to introduce today's guest. First of all, he's been on the show once before, but he's also a New York Times and USA Today bestseller, international bestseller. So you've probably seen his work. I'm talking to thriller author Steve Barry. Hey, Steve, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here. Thank you.
We're talking about your new book today, which has not arrived in my mailbox yet, but I went ahead and bought it online so I could read it. That's the one, Malta Exchange, man. Why don't you give me a rundown? I know what the book is about. Why don't you tell the listeners and the viewers what Malta Exchange is all about?
Well, a pope has died, a conclave has been called, and a cardinal has fled Rome, headed to Malta in search of a document from the 4th century. And Cotton gets caught up in all this intrigue that happens around this ticking clock down to when the conclave begins. And it deals with something from history, something that's real, something I think that will surprise readers. This is not a book about a secret that destroys the Catholic Church, though. That's not what this book is about. In fact, every character in this book, the last thing in the world they want to do is destroy the Catholic Church. So it's a little bit different in that regard. It deals with an aspect of religion that I've not seen dealt with in fiction, and that's why I decided to deal with it.
That's interesting. So you write about the Knights of Malta, which I had not actually, surprisingly, had not actually heard about before. So is that where did you kind of pick up the trail on those guys?
When I was in Malta, I was there and toured Valletta, was all over Valletta and saw all of the things that the knights had built all those centuries ago. And I got kind of interested in them. I began to do some more research. They're the last of the warrior monks that still exist. The Templars are gone. The Teutonics are gone. But the Hospitallers, which is what they were called originally, are still here. And now they're called the Knights of Malta. They're headquartered in Rome now, in two small villas in Rome, which together form the smallest country in the world. Those two villas, 150 nations recognize the Knights of Malta as a sovereign entity, which is kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
Well, they also have observer status at the UN, which is kind of interesting too. And they are a worldwide humanitarian organization, but I just resurrected some cool stuff inside them that used to be there a long time ago and brought it back again.
That's really, so did you go specifically to Malta to research this, or did you already know about it?
Not the first time. Second time I did, yes.
Yeah, that's specific. That's probably a bit better than just hopping on Google and Wikipedia and finding out.
Well, you're going to learn a whole lot more on the ground than you
True.
Do. That's why I go. And you've got to learn some things. You've got to see some things. You've got to deal with it. And I was fortunate that I got to see all that. And I did get some ideas.
What was it? What was sort of the spark, though? When you were in Malta the first time, I assume you got the idea. So what was it that triggered that?
I don't really know if there was one thing. It was just sort of a conglomerate of it. If you go to Valletta and you walk through there, you're literally walking in the 16th century. So
Right. You're
assaulted from all sides with stuff.
Yeah.
And a novel began to form in my brain as I was doing that. Now, it wasn't all there, but I got enough of it. Yeah. And then I went back the second time specifically to hunt down what I was looking for and begin to put it together and make the book. So I think it was the whole place. I mean, Malta is one of those great places. If you're looking for a really cool place to take a vacation, that is a cool place to go.
Yeah. I've been kind of sniffing around online, walking the streets on Google Maps just to check it out. And it's really interesting. It's probably a place I'll visit soon.
Well, that's one of the purposes of the novel, to get people interested in going to see these places.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So it's a thriller/travelogue.
I have people tell me all the time that they read the books and get an urge to want to go and see those places.
Well, that's true. Some of the places that are on my must-visit list actually came out of your books. So I guess you're pulling that off, man.
Trying.
So I'm always curious when authors are when their work is. In a research,
I buy them at a used bookshop not far from here, about an hour away from here, that has a humongous history department and thousands of volumes in it. And I'm able to get a good range, and they change constantly. It's constantly updated. So I buy most of them there. The rest I get when I'm on site on the trips. Yeah. And then I use a few eBooks, not very many, but a few. eBooks are bad for research because I need an index. I need a readable index. I don't read 400 books, but I read large chunks of 400 books. Yeah. So, I have to find the chunks I'm looking for in those books.
Right.
And an index is important. And the eBooks, they got to work on that. They got to get those indexes to work a little better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something. eBooks are, I'm in that business, of course. So eBooks are tough when it comes to that sort of thing. We're working to solve it.
They're fine to take along and thumb through them and read passages, but you're going to have to thumb through the whole book to find what you're looking for.
Yeah. Now, are you a notes in the margin guy, or do you keep a separate notebook?
I write on paper. I write on my notes separately. And when I'm done, it's about that tall of paper. And I'm only going to use about 10% of it.
Right.
The rest of it's going to, but I write it all down, so I'll have it, so I don't have to go hunt it again.
Yeah. Yeah. My problem is I'll do notes like that. Handwritten notes, and then I can't remember where in that stack the little tidbits were that I wanted to reference. So,
I have that trouble sometimes too. What I do is I organize the notes by subject matter, so that makes it a little easier. So I can narrow down. Like Valletta will have a section. The co-cathedral would have had a section.
Okay.
Lake Como would have had a section. I have them broken up at least in subject matter. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So Malta must be in the zeitgeist right now. My good friend Ernest Dempsey, who's also a thriller writer, is writing a Malta book. That must be. And he swears to me that he didn't know your book was going to exist when he started doing
Krzyzinski
research.
Wrote one too, and his came last October, and I didn't know he was writing.
That's the way that happens, right? Yeah. Suddenly, everybody's writing on the same topic. You get 50 Malta books and 20.
It's interesting for that to happen because it's fun to see how we deal with it. Chris dealt with Malta in a completely different way than I did.
Yeah.
So we dealt with it, and so it would be interesting to see what this guy does with it. It's just interesting to see that with different imaginations.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a year, and then I'll do a Malta. I'll go visit Malta, and then I'll do my own version later.
Once you go, you'll want to do it. You'll see what I mean.
I know. Yeah. Well, I'm already intrigued because, I thought I knew about all the little secret clandestine organizations that are out there. So it's always interesting to discover something new under the sun. So, the last time you were here, I didn't really get a chance. We kind of scratched the surface. I didn't really get a chance to talk to you about Cotton Malone himself, like the character and what the origins of that character were. How did you construct Cotton?
Well, he came to me one evening in Copenhagen in Hybro Plods, and I was having dinner there, and he just sort of popped in my brain, and I decided he was going to live right there and have a bookshop there. And then I got some of his characteristics. I wanted him to be retired agent, so I wanted him not to have any connections. I wanted him divorced from his wife, so he didn't have a wife and have to deal with all that. I mean, heroes aren't attached. I wanted him unattached. I wanted him to be an ordinary kind of guy, but extraordinary when he needed to be. And he's not a guy, he doesn't go to the gym and work out every day. He doesn't run 5 miles, but he's in good shape though. He's not, he can handle himself and deal with what needs to be done. And he's smart and he's intelligent, but he's also human, so he makes mistakes. I wanted him to be a human that messes up, but he's able to recover from those mistakes. And I created him in Templar, and I wasn't arrogant enough to think that I'd get to write 14 books with him. I was just hoping to do one, maybe two if we're lucky.
Right.
But he caught on. Templar did really well. It's still to this day my largest selling novel.
Yeah.
And remains my largest selling novel. And then Alexandria Link did even better, and then they just kept growing. And he said he's still around now, 14 books later. He's a little different. He's not the same guy that he was.
Right.
He settled down a little bit. I never thought he would. He has one love interest. I never thought he would. I thought he would play the field, but he didn't. And he's a little more introspective, a little more emotional, a little more, I don't know, not as cold as I think he might have developed.
Right.
He changed along the way.
That is what's interesting to me about that. And I start to wonder if there is a sort of inevitability to these character arcs. My character, my protagonist has kind of gone that same route. He softened quite a bit. He was sort of a womanizer when I first introduced him, and now he's kind of got a solid relationship. I wonder how much of that is us maturing as we write these characters.
A little bit of both in there. For me, it was my wife, Elizabeth. She's the one who made him, she changed him.
Okay.
And, you know, she changed him a lot, and Cassiopeia changed him, and Cassiopeia, she championed Cassiopeia. And as Cassiopeia was championed, she worked on Malone and changed him to some degree. And it is a little bit of us growing, but you also want your characters to change. No matter how you started him, he needed to change.
Right.
And because you can't write 14, 18 books with the same guy and he never learns his lesson.
He just resets with each book, right? He's
doing the same dumb things over and over again. So they have to change.
So that character, who's influenced that character?
Me.
In terms of you, he's mostly?
He's me. When I created him, I just put my personality in there. So he's he's me. And Cassiopeia is her.
Yeah.
So it makes it easier. There's actual arguments in there that her and I have actually had.
Whoa.
With the actual
brave. That's very brave.
Yeah, there's a little bit of both of us in those characters.
Have your readers commented on that character's changes over time?
Yes, they noticed it, and I didn't hide the change. He's not touchy feely, and he doesn't cry every 5 seconds.
Right.
But he's not as cold and impassioned and impersonal as I might have developed him to some degree.
Right. What's motivating him to do that? I mean, because he gets himself in a lot of trouble. Not always intentionally.
Yeah, it used to be, you know, a friend needs his help, his family needs his help, Stephanie needs his help, but I ran out of those. I mean, you know, after so many books, you run out. So now he works for money. He just works for money. He needs to make the money, and he gets paid. But what I've done is each time it starts off as something simple,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes something much more.
Yeah.
So, and there's a little bit of a personal motivation in there. But in the old days, it was a lot of a personal motivation.
Right.
But I just ran out. After about 10, 12 books, you just run out of those.
Yeah, things so you don't really think about when you start.
It's a good problem to have. I mean, you know, you have, but I just transitioned him to a hired gun is what he is.
Okay. Okay. And a hired gun who's tied in with history. It's just really interesting.
Well, he gets caught up in all these things. And usually the job starts off as something simple. And then in this book, it started off something simple. He was going to retrieve some letters. And he was sent to either buy them or steal them.
Yeah.
One or the other. Just get them.
Yeah.
And it turns into something far bigger, far much more. And he stays in because he realizes Stephanie Nell needs his help.
Right.
And he's very loyal to Stephanie, and he's not going to leave her in a lurch. That's the way Malone's very loyal. He's a very loyal guy.
Yeah.
And he could have easily gone home, said, I'm done, I'm out of here. But no, he said, no, she's in trouble, she needs my help, I'm going to stay there and finish it up for her.
So have you ever, in the process of your research and in writing these books, have you ever accidentally sort of stumbled on some intrigue of some level, some real-world intrigue?
Nothing real. Well, I've stumbled on historical mysteries that I didn't know existed. Hmm. There's one in this novel that deals with the Holy See itself and the financial corruption that's going on within the government of the Catholic Church. And that's not made up. That's real. And it's there. And so I didn't know about that. I kind of came across it in the research, and then I decided to include it in the novel.
Yeah, that's the interesting stuff. Readers are always asking about that. Like, I think readers secretly want us to be spies or, hired gunmen or something.
We're not. We're just wordsmiths,
as
as we would say, wordslingers.
You're wordslingers, exactly. Yeah, scotch drinking at times, that's about the most dangerous thing I do in a day. So you, because of a conversation with you, I had already been considering this, but you tipped the balance for me. I went ahead and joined International Thriller Writers. Yeah. Thank you very much. So how are things going with that organization? What's the biggest benefit, by the way? I could speak personally, but I mean, what's the biggest benefit for writers to join an organization like that?
Networking.
Yeah.
Networking. I mean, you've got 5,000 working. You've got 5,000 members. 4,000 plus are working thriller writers.
Yeah.
That's and the biggest names in the business too are in. So we have them all. Membership in ITW is free. If you're published by an approved publisher and there's no dues or anything, we have a lot of folks. But the networking, you're going to have direct access to so many people. Thriller Fest gives you direct access. That's our gathering every summer in New York City. That's summer camp for thriller writers and thriller enthusiasts. So it's networking. It's being able to contact someone, to ask a question, to help. But it's all there. Thriller writers are some of the most generous people I've ever known. They're very... Yeah. Very out, very easy to work with, very giving. You don't see a lot of jealousy and that type of thing. Everybody wants everybody to succeed.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Everyone is very helpful. Everyone, not just the guys kind of at my level or lower. They're also the guys all the way up the chain who are willing to talk to people, willing to share advice. There's all kinds of help.
Absolutely, I spend. The week of Thriller Fest, I probably plot somewhere between 10 and 15 novels during that week.
Wow, really?
I am a terrific plotter of other people's work.
Do they credit you?
I'm not so good at my own, but I can really do it for somebody else pretty good.
Yeah, that's funny.
I do. I spend a lot of time plotting books.
And why? What is it that drives you to help out?
Help. They need help. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a problem and they explain the problem. I've done it longer than they have. So usually I can see the solution to that problem fairly quickly. It, like I said, it's very easy to solve other people's problems.
Right.
I have a hard time doing my own plotting. It's very difficult.
Right.
But I can see it very clearly with the others. So they're basically asking you for your experience and your help. And I don't mind doing that. And I'm not the only one. I know lots of folks who do that.
Yeah. And you're meeting these through the organization in the conference.
You'll meet them as members and at the conference and all over the, anytime you're out and at bookstores. I mean, I see ITW members. I just came back from tour. I saw a lot of ITW members.
Yeah. Yeah. We need a challenge coin.
We do need that. We need like a coin like that. It would be kind of cool, wouldn't it?
There you go. That'd be all right. I'll get on working that out for you guys. That way I can contribute. All right. Well, so the book I'm enjoying it. I haven't gotten to finish it yet. I was going to get a copy in the mail, and I think it's still on its way. Things went all kinds of haywire mail-wise for me here in the Houston, Texas area. But I did buy it on Kindle, and I've been reading it. I just didn't get to finish reading it before we chatted. So I'm really enjoying it.
Thank you. I just came back from Houston. I was at Murder by the Book Friday night.
You were there, and I did not get to come by. I knew you were going to be there, and I got kind of sidetracked into a whole other thing. So I'm sorry I missed you.
Scott Brick was there with me, who does my audios.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool to have the audio narrator there.
Yeah, he's a fantastic narrator, by the way.
Oh, he's great. He's number one. He's best. And
he's
the best. Hear his voice and everything. And so, everyone's very curious to ask him a lot of questions.
Yeah. Do you work pretty closely with the narrators at all?
Only if they need a pronunciation of something. Okay. Like that. If they say, how do you – like I use a lot of real people's names in my books, so they want to make sure that they pronounce those names correctly.
Right, right. All right, man.
I do that, but that's about all that I do.
I very seriously regret that I did not get to come see you, because I like Scott too. I haven't gotten to talk to him one-on-one yet. We know each other. We have a lot of mutual acquaintances. I know all the Findaway Voices guys. He works with those guys, so I'll have to circle around with him. So, all right. Well, look, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I appreciate you, taking the time to chat with me. I'm really enjoying the book, so I know everybody listening will enjoy the book.
I hope they do. It's out in stores now, and they can find out more about me and the books at steveberry.org.
All right. Well, you heard it here, folks. Go to steveberry.org, check out the Malta Exchange and all the others. There's 13 other books in that series that you are bound to enjoy if you like these archaeological thrillers and historic thrillers. So, oh, you and I, I'm like four gaps away from you on the historical thriller list right now, man. Catching up to you.
Come on.
I don't think I can. I'm going to top you. All right. Well, everybody, thank you for tuning in. Right now you're hearing the Groovy Bridge music. You may dance in place at will. If you stick around, I'm sure to say something really interesting on the other side of this break. So we'll see you there.
Well, okay. So here I am. I couldn't resist. Had to come back for just a little final word. So I hope you enjoyed that interview with Steve Berry. I know I enjoyed talking to him. This is the second time we've had him on the show. He's an interesting guy. He writes books in the same genre that I like to write in. So that's been fun. And I hope there was something you could take away from that might help in your own writing career. So we're going to go ahead and wrap things up. I just wanted to say a quick hello and goodbye here at the end. Make sure you are following me in the various places. So a new website you might want to check out is authorontheroad.com. And that will allow you to follow my journey. Also, for the authors, for author-centric stuff, check out indieauthorblueprint.com. And normally I have a little ad at the beginning, but I didn't port that out. I'm producing this on the iPad right now, so I still got some pieces missing. But go to indieauthorblueprint.com. Roland Denzel and I are creating content. We're finding content online. We're building a presence that's meant to help indie authors as they sort of build and grow their author careers and trying to make this a little easier for you. So go check that out. That's the important one for you as an author. And otherwise, make sure you check out authorontheroad.com to see what Kara and I are doing as we move about in the world. And please, go on YouTube. Go on YouTube and go to youtube.com/KevinTomlinson and subscribe to me there. It helps. I need to get up to like 1,000 subscribers soon so that I can start using some of the tools. And then we're going to hopefully skyrocket that number from there. But go subscribe and share that with some folks. Have some friends and family go check it out. I hope you enjoy the Kevin Show and all the other stuff that will inevitably show up on the Kevin Tomlinson channel. So that's it. Thank you so much for being a part of this Wordslinger podcast episode, and I hope you have a safe and happy weekend out there and weeks ahead. God bless you. We'll see you all next time.
Wordslinger.